This is Joyful, happiness movement and podcast. I discover the science behind happiness and well-being, and through sharing stories, I am searching for the secret to a happier life. You can find two types of episodes on our platforms, guest series and solo episodes. In our guest series, I will be meeting with experts who share their knowledge or experiences contributing to a better understanding of a happier life. The solo episodes are divided into series of 5 episodes in each series, as in each episode I will talk about a topic related to one of the 5 pillars of happiness that we've designed at Joyful. If you're curious to know what are those 5 pillars, I invite you to check out our Instagram page. I hope you're ready, as it's time to be joyful. For me, it all started when I saw the film Pay It Forward. It's a film about a boy named Trevor who gets an assignment in class where he has to perform 3 good deeds to 3 different people. And the idea is that each of those 3 different people has to perform 3 good deeds to another 3 people. If everyone follows this plan, probably we can make real change and provoke a cascade of good deeds and happiness. Although I was very young when I first saw this film, I must have been 7 or 10 years old, I guess that it had a big impact on me, because today I still want to be like Trevor and act to create a happier world around me. This is why we started Joyful. To begin with, I wanted to discuss with you what is happiness. First, many of you, when you think about happiness, you might think that it's a fleeting state, so it's a feeling that you get and it lasts maybe a couple of seconds and then it goes away. The second thing that you might think of is that happiness is very difficult or impossible to define, so why bother? Why try to define something that's so complex and complicated? And finally, a third remark or comment that I could imagine someone having when talking about happiness or when I'm actually presenting my idea to someone is that, well, but it's naive to go after happiness, to try finding these answers on how to be happier. If it was so easy, we could all just follow some steps and there we are. It's not that easy, and so why bother, you know? Why trying to find these answers? So first, you might argue that happiness is a fleeting state. Well, I would like to show to you that it's not necessarily the case. As for instance, you can imagine that you say to your friends or family that you were happy or you were happier than you were now. For example, when you were at university or at high school. You may also say that the summer of 2018 was a particularly happy time for you. So this means that we can be happy also over longer periods of time. So in particular, I would think of it as having more positive or negative affect. So if we have more positive affect, it means that we have this overall higher baseline level of happiness. And this is something that can fluctuate, in my view, over longer periods of time. So whereas happiness can be just a fleeting state, so it can be just like this temporary feeling that we get, it can also be something else, and so it can also be this longer feeling that we have. It is very difficult to define happiness, but it's not necessarily what I would like to do here. What I would like to propose is to identify the factors that contribute to being happier. So if you are interested in having a definition of happiness, then you can go and find that in a dictionary. And here at Joyful, I would like to focus on discussing the factors that may contribute to feeling and being happier. And finally, if you think that it's naive to find out what is happiness or to try and live a happier life, well, perhaps I can change your mind. And if not, well, it's not a big deal. Maybe it's just not a place for you. Here Even though someone may not like it, I will engage in trying to find the answer on how to be happier, and I will try to spread this attitude around. Okay, so even though I told you that I do not want to focus on defining happiness, I still think it's useful to talk about what is understood as happiness, especially since I want to discuss some scientific research on that topic. So in positive psychology, as this is the area of psychology that works on the concepts of, for example, happiness, they use the measure of subjective well-being, so the notion perhaps of subjective well-being, when they talk about happiness. Subjective well-being is made of four factors, and you can study them either in separation or altogether. And those four different factors are life satisfaction, so the judgment of your own life, so whether in general you would consider your life to be good or bad. It's the satisfaction with important life domains, so it's the satisfaction that you have with your marriage, relationships, your work satisfaction, and so on. And the two other factors are levels of negative and positive affect, so the prevalence of either negative emotions and moods or positive emotion and moods. These four factors may be investigated in positive psychology when we talk about happiness and the research on this topic. Before we fully start, and before I share with you the factors that we commonly think contribute to our happiness levels, I would first like to talk about something else, so about the fact that we have this tendency to attribute our happiness or unhappiness to exterior factors. So very often you can hear people saying, I can't be happy because I hate my job. I have a horrible boss. Perhaps you can't be happy because you have no friends. Another thing that very often we hear people say is that I can't be happy because I can't afford going on the holiday I like, or I can't afford buying a new car, or just something which is related to the fact that I can't be happy because I'm broke. Interestingly, in existing research on happiness, and this is something that is repeated in various published articles, which raises the credibility of this information, the information that we have is that our life circumstance actually accounts only for 10% of our overall happiness levels. The three factors which determine our happiness are our genetics, life circumstance, and intentional action, so some voluntary control that we have. Genetics accounts for 50% of our happiness levels. Intentional activity, or some practice that you engage in, so your voluntary action, accounts for 40%. And life circumstance, so factors such as gender, education, culture, and so on, accounts only for the resting 10%. So this means that, well, even though perhaps you might say, oh, so I'm unhappy because of my genetics. Well, no, because there's still 40% that you can work towards too, like with your own actions. And there is a 10% attributed to your life circumstance. And this is not like a 0-1 system. So you can sort of work with one of those factors in order to augment your overall happiness levels. It is all just to tell you that your action matters. So research shows that your action matters more than the life circumstance. Okay, so if we've established what does it mean to be happy, what is happiness in scientific literature, and what are the common excuses that we use when we say that we can be happy, and why we are wrong when we say that, I would like to move on to the main part of today's episode, so the very first episode of Joyful. In order to introduce to you the notion of happiness and how we commonly understand it, I decided to choose four factors that people commonly think have an impact on our happiness levels and talk about the facts and the myths regarding these factors. I chose them somehow arbitrarily, so if you don't agree, then well, you can tell me that you think my choice is wrong, But and then like if you have another proposition, then I will be happy to talk about it in another episodes of this podcast. However, for today, I chose as follows: money, stuff or material goods, fame and recognition, and love and relationships. So I will discuss how do they contribute, if they contribute or if they don't contribute to our overall happiness levels. I know that many of you might tell me, what? Money does not bring happiness. But in the end, it is something that people do take into consideration. Like, why are we after money so much? It is somehow essential to our lives. We need money, right? And a lot of people think that if they will have more money, they will be happier. So this is why I decided to analyze this factor, for example. Then when it comes to material goods, well, it's similar. We, in the end, we do pursue having more things. We may want to have nice, pretty things around us. So does that actually make us happier? We will take a look at that. Then it's fame and recognition. So we do have this need of being admired, and we do want other people to look up to us. This is actually why social media works, right? Because we can show how amazing our lives are, and other people can think, oh, I wish I had this kind of life myself. So this is somehow related to this need of being recognized as someone who does something of value. And then finally, love and relationships. So on one hand, we have this idea that if we have true love, then this is something that really makes us happy. And also if we are surrounded by a lot of people, a lot of friends, this could also probably contribute in a significant way to our overall happiness levels. Let's start with money. Your mother, your grandmother, or your friends, they all might have been telling you that money can't buy happiness. Well, is that really true? Scientists also asked themselves this question, and they did a number of studies in order to investigate what is the answer. For instance, in 2010, there was a study by Daniel Kahneman and Angus Deaton, where they wanted to know whether there is a threshold after which our income does not impact our happiness levels. In general, studies show that money has an impact on our happiness levels. So tell your grandma that she was wrong. In particular, for example, in the Kahneman and Deaton study, they wanted to find out until which level money brings us happiness. So they had this intuition that, okay, money probably brings us happiness until some level, but then maybe it fades away. So they asked this question and it turned out that they were right. So there actually is a threshold after which our happiness level doesn't increase anymore. So now I would invite you to perhaps guess this number. If you want, you can now pause this episode and tell me what you think is the number, is the yearly income after which money doesn't bring you any more happiness. You can give me this number either for the US or for European countries, as I will also be talking about Europe in a moment. So if you want, pause the recording and let me know in the comment section, what do you think is the annual income threshold after which money doesn't bring you any more happiness for the US or for Europe? Okay, so if you're back or if you just didn't want to participate, then I will tell you the number now. So in the US, the threshold is actually $75,000 per year, and it's the data from 2010. And when it comes to Europe, the number is almost 28,000 euro per year, which can be rounded to $35,000 if you want to compare Europe with the US. So what's the amount of money? So there you go. So what was the study? In the Kahneman and Deaton study, they were investigating emotional well-being and life evaluation. So they decided to separate the notion of happiness into those two factors. And emotional well-being is defined as the emotional quality of an individual everyday experiences. So it's the frequency and intensity of experiences of joy, stress, sadness, anger, and so on. All these things that make your life pleasant or unpleasant. And it is being asked through a questionnaire. And then life evaluation refers to the thoughts that people have about their life when they think about it. And life evaluation is measured by the so-called control self-anchoring scale, which is it's just one simple question where you should imagine a ladder with steps number from 0 at the bottom to 10 at the top. And so 10 is the best possible life for you, and the bottom of the ladder represents the worst possible life for you. And so you should answer on which step of the ladder you would say that you personally feel that you stand at this time. And this is how you measure life evaluation. So what Kahneman and Deaton found was that income and education are more closely related to life evaluation, and factors such as health, caregiving, loneliness are stronger predictors of daily emotions, so of this emotional well-being. So it's really interesting. So you can go and read the entire study. I will give you the link in the description of this show. But for now, like if someone asks you whether money brings happiness, or if someone tells you that money can't buy happiness, you can tell them that it can buy happiness until some level. A similar study for European countries was conducted in 2020. I mean, it was published in 2020. It was done by Romanian scientists Gabriela Muresan, Cristina Ciumas, and Monica Akim. They investigated a sample of 26 European countries over the period from 2008 until 2016. And so they found, as I've mentioned, that the annual threshold after which money doesn't bring you any more happiness in Europe seems to be almost $28,000. And what's really interesting is that they've also mentioned that when it comes to European countries, culture seems to play a very important role in the perception of happiness. So perhaps in one country, what will contribute the most to happiness is money, but in the other, it may be the relationship with your family, or it may be your religion, and so on and so on. So culture in European countries seems to be a very important predictor when it comes to happiness levels. Okay, well, there's of course a question of what do we do with the money that we have, which brings us to the second factor that may contribute to the levels of our happiness, namely stuff, material goods that we may buy. Many of you may intuitively know that, yeah, no, buying things can't bring you happiness. But if we look at it, very often, even though perhaps on a rational level, we are aware of the fact that material stuff does not bring us happiness. In our daily lives, very often we think that if we buy a new phone, a new car, a new pair of shoes, we will be happier. After all, otherwise we probably would not buy all the things that we are buying. Unfortunately, according to research, buying material things does not lead to greater happiness. Among other things, it's probably mostly due to the phenomenon of the so-called hedonic adaptation. When we buy something, we are hyped about it. Maybe we are really happy when we receive this new thing, when we have it, when we can use it for the first time. But very fast, we get used to the fact that we have this new thing. So even if you have a new car, you will be super excited that you have this fancy new car for a moment, maybe a month, maybe 6 months. But in the end, after some time passes, you will quickly get used to it and you will perhaps go after something new, something better, something bigger. Maybe you will just try to find a way to recreate this feeling of excitement that you had when you bought your new car. And this will lead it will be kind of a vicious circle, because in the end, like, every time you buy something, you will quickly get bored with it and you will buy a new thing and so on and so on. And it leads to nowhere. Well, there are some things that you can do to delay this hedonic adaptation or to somehow conquer it. For instance, you can just notice how happy you are each time you use it. So maybe if you bought this new car, if you really enjoy it each time, or almost each time that you're inside, because I know it has a nice smell, like you notice how nice it feels to be seated so comfortable. So if you learn to pay attention, to savor those moments where you can use this new thing, then you can perhaps conquer a bit this phenomenon of hedonic adaptation. But in most cases, you just get bored with the stuff that you buy, and that's the end of the story. So buying material things does not lead to greater happiness. However, if you do want to buy something with the money that you have, It has been shown in a number of studies, and it has also been written about, for instance, in the review paper by Mogilner and Norton in 2016, that pro-social spending leads to increased levels of happiness. So what you can do is to spend your money in a pro-social way. What does it mean? It means to spend the money that you have on other people. This is really contrary to our intuitions, but it turns out that the more people give, the happier they are. Moreover, it seems that this result is valid for both the rich and the poor, and it is true for people from different countries and different cultures. Another thing that you can do with the money that you have is spend it on experiences. As Mogilner and Norton write, if experiences are more self-defining, more unique, harder to compare against the foregone alternatives, and less prone to hedonic adaptation. So this all makes the experiences more worthwhile, and in the end they will bring you more happiness and joy than just buying material goods. Moreover, there is also this important aspect of social interaction. Well, very often if we buy experiences, so if we go on travels, or if we, I don't know, like buy any kind of excursions, whatever, if you go to a restaurant, you go there with someone. So the social aspect really adds to the fact that it increases your happiness levels. So we've talked about money, we've talked about stuff. Now let's move on to fame and recognition. So I think that what's important to notice here is that we have these two ways of how you can become, quote, famous or recognized. I think that if you become famous because you've really worked towards something, so you put a lot of effort in your work and now you're being recognized in your area, in your environment, people look up to you because they know that you have a lot of experience, then this will actually increase your happiness because it is linked with the deep feeling of satisfaction that you have. If you work hard for something, then you succeed, you have the feeling of satisfaction, and with it along may come some kind of a fame or recognition. However, if you're famous just because you've posted a kind of silly video on Instagram where you twerk to some kind of song, or just, you know, something that doesn't really require a lot of effort from your side, then the fact that you're famous, the fact that you get some recognition, the fact that people will comment or like your posts will not really lead to increased happiness. So if fame is related to your hard work and to an actual recognition of your work, then it would lead to greater happiness. However, if it's kind of instant fame, then it has nothing to do with your happiness. It will just not have a positive impact on your happiness levels. Another important aspect that I wanted to mention here is that, well, we should ask ourselves, why would we like to become famous? And I think that a big part in this need that we might have is the fact that we now exist a lot on social media, and on social media we can have an insight into the lives of the so-called rich and famous, right? So you can follow the celebrities you like and you can see how amazing their lives are. So you might have this dream yourself to become famous just like them. So what we're doing here is that we're trying to compare our life with the lives of other people. And what we know, what has been proven by multiple research studies, is that social comparison is the source of unhappiness. And using social media enhances social comparison and so decreases our happiness. So if you do use social media, just try to pay attention to the fact that, like, try to pay attention and not compare yourself to other people as much. So I know it's difficult, but it's just something that you have to keep in mind, to remember that your life is yours and their life is theirs, and that each of us has their struggles, and that comparing yourself to other people is only a source of unhappiness. Finally, we move on to the fourth factor that may contribute to the levels of happiness, which is love and relationships. Some of you might have took part in my survey, which I did on our Instagram account, where I asked you what contributes the most to your levels of happiness. And a majority of you told me that it's love and relationships. And this would be in line with what research tells us. Research tells us that the amount and the kind of relationships that we have is a big predictor of our happiness levels. In a study from 2002, Diener and Seligman did a survey on students from the University of Illinois, and they asked the students about their happiness levels. I believe it was a longitudinal study, and what they found is that people who reported to be the happiest had also really strong ties to friends and family and commitment to spending time with them. This, in fact, was the most salient characteristic shared by the students who reported to be the happiest. Also, according to the World Happiness Report, our relationships, so the quality and quantity of our relationships, is the best predictor of our happiness levels. And people who have one or more close friendships tend to be happier than those who don't. What's really important here is to realize that the quality of these relationships is really essential. What's important is that we have friends with whom we can talk to on a really deep level and connect on a really deep level. It's also important to notice here that, well, we very often take our friendships kind of for granted, especially in the times where we move, we travel, we are often separated from our friends. We tend to neglect our friendships and we don't properly nurture them. It is really important to take care and spend some time and give attention to our friendships, because this is what truly matters in our lives. Okay, well, I started with friends, but actually perhaps I should have started with family. Relationships that we have with our families are also crucial, and it is really important to take care, if you can, to also nurture the relationships that you have with your siblings, with your parents, with your grandparents, and so on. So if you're in a place where perhaps your relationship with the members of your family is not ideal, perhaps it's a good idea to try and work on that. I know it's tricky, as with family, I think it's the most difficult to really take care of the relationship that you have, but it is crucial for the levels of your happiness. Finally, let's focus on romantic relationships. So what about romance? Is it really important? Well, there are some mixed results. So in general, people who are in long-term relationships, they report higher subjective well-being than those who are not, so who are single or divorced. However, there is also this phenomenon, the phenomenon of hedonic adaptation is also present, especially when it comes to marriage. So it turns out that just after you're married or just before you're getting married, your life satisfaction, you evaluate your life satisfaction to be higher, but it returns to baseline more or less after 2 years of marriage. So it means that your emotional well-being may be more elevated throughout your life if you're in a long-term relationship. But when it comes to life satisfaction, so this is this other variable that we've already discussed when I talked about the Kahneman study. So life satisfaction, it returns to baseline because of the phenomenon of hedonic adaptation. So even if after, just after getting married, you might think that your life is great, it's better than it was before you got married, then like this effect will pass more or less after 2 years, at least that is what studies show. Perhaps it has changed also because now our rate of marriages, I think, is lower. We also get married in different age than we used to. So yeah, perhaps it has already changed. But this is the data we have, and this is the data from 2006. All right, so to sum up, just quickly to remind you what we've said so far. I told you that there are supposedly four factors that may contribute to our happiness levels, which are money, stuff, so the things that we buy, fame or recognition, and love and relationships. And we've established that money can bring us happiness, but only until some level, which is $75,000 in the US and almost 30,000 euro per year in European countries. Then we talked about stuff that we have. We established that that buying material things does not lead to greater happiness, but you can buy either experiences, or you can use your money for pro-social spending. So spend your money on other people or on animals if you want also. And this would perhaps lead to greater happiness. Then we've discussed fame and recognition. So whereas the recognition that you've worked for might lead to greater happiness. The instant fame would not. And finally, we've talked about love and relationships, which are crucial for your happiness and for your well-being. So your relationships with your family, your relationships with your friends, and your romantic relationships are all really, really important when it comes to taking care of your happiness levels. We've discussed the four external factors that may contribute to our happiness levels. I'm telling external because, well, before, just at the beginning, I was talking about the factors that determine our happiness, which were genetics, life circumstance, and intentional activities. So those are somehow separate. I think you already got that these are somehow separate. They tell us what internal factors may determine our happiness levels. And now I was talking about some external things that we think may contribute to our happiness levels. So we have finished discussing them. If you would like to know more, then I can recommend you to go and check out the resources for this episode. And now I would like to move on to present you the five pillars to happiness. So the five pillars that we've designed at Joyful in order to create a happier life for yourself. Number one, prioritize your health. This is something that we have not yet discussed, but which is essential for a happier life. We'll be discussing the fulfillment of basic needs, so things like sleep, eating clean, but also we'll be talking about movement and about less obvious things that may contribute to better health. Number two is mental health. It may seem obvious that, well, happiness, of course, it is related to mental health. After all, happiness is a state of the mind. Well, yes, this is also why we include it here. It is crucial. It is super important for our happiness levels to take care of our mental health. But what we want to propose here at Joyful is that we will be talking not only about those obvious mental conditions that you might want to avoid. So, for example, depression. So we will be talking probably in some amount of like how to avoid mental conditions that may prevent you from being happy. But more importantly, what we would like to do is to focus on those daily practices and daily activities that you can do in order to act for your mental health. So we want to learn how to take care of your mental health in your daily life and what is mental health really about. So before our health really starts to fall, what can we do to prevent this fall? And how can we ameliorate our daily experiences? So perhaps how can we have a more positive effect in our daily lives? So I will be talking with guests and I will be presenting you some personal content that will explore this notion of mental health. Number three, relationships. This is something that we've already covered a little bit in this episode, but we've only scratched the surface. Relationships are essential for our well-being and for our happiness. It is important to know how to nurture our relationships, which is why at Joyful we will be talking with expert guests, but also I will be presenting some topics on my own, where we will be discussing what are good relationships, different kinds of relationships, so family, friends, romantic relationships, and we will be discovering interesting facts about them and learning how to be happier through having valuable relationships with others. Number four, purpose and meaning. Feeling of purpose and meaning is essential for our happiness. It is also something that makes this podcast different from perhaps other podcasts on well-being and self-development, as it is not only about health and about how we develop our personal skills, but it is also about this feeling of purpose and meaning and finding sense, so finding something bigger in our lives. I hope that through some meaningful conversations, you'll be able to together explore this notion of ikigai and see how to find something truly meaningful in our lives, how to keep up our motivation to engage in those activities, and we will perhaps see if it indeed can make us happier. And finally, number five, acts of kindness. In order to be happier, we should engage in some activities where we act for the benefit of other people around us. I think that if we don't engage in this kind of activity where we contribute to the surrounding world, then we can't really know what does it mean to be happier. So I encourage you to try and engage in little acts of kindness yourself. And in the meantime, we will be publishing episodes where we talk about the importance of kindness and philanthropic action for augmenting the levels of happiness for yourself, but also, like Trevor, augmenting the amount of happiness in the world around us. To sum up, there are 5 steps to happiness, 5 pillars designed at Joyful: physical health, mental health, relationships, sense of purpose, and acts of kindness. In the next episodes, which will be divided into a series of 5, I will devote each episode discussing a topic from one of the 5 pillars to a happier life. Then, if it's not me who's talking, I will also be inviting expert guests who will share their knowledge, discussing also topics related to those 5 pillars of happiness. If you want to be up to date with all of our activities, I invite you to follow us on Instagram. Also, I give you an opportunity to engage in your little act of kindness and like, comment, or subscribe our channel. This way you could make our day a little bit better, doesn't cost you that much, and it will bring a smile upon our faces. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you back soon at Joyful.